Welcome to the Science Update Podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, and this is the podcast for November 12th, 2010.
The Science Update Podcast is produced by AAAS, advancing science, serving society.
The males were not believed to carry a genetic trait that all appeared in the offspring.
Monarchs, when they're infected with this parasite, prefer to lay their eggs on plants that will make their offspring less sick.
So not only did they not mate for life, sometimes they could be pretty promiscuous and mate with multiple males.
If you're a good tool user, you have access to a nutritionally very rewarding but otherwise hidden food source.
This week, why crows use tools, mice that can smell light, butterflies that use medicinal plants, asexual boa constrictors, and the truth about lobster lovemaking. But first, Suzanne Bard found out why just being pink isn't good enough for flamingos.
For centuries, humans have painted their bodies or applied makeup to make certain features stand out. Now researchers have evidence that some birds do this too. According to behavioral ecologist Juana Mott, flamingos would be white if it weren't for pigments in the tiny crustaceans that they eat. Now, Amat and his colleagues at the Spanish Scientific Research Council have discovered that flamingos make themselves even more colorful by applying additional pigments from a special gland near their tail.
This pigment they use as a makeup. They rub the cheeks on the neck and on the upper part of the back. They distribute the pigment on the feathers.
He says gaudy plumage is important for attracting a mate, and the flamingos probably use the makeup to make themselves more alluring. But once they've found a partner and have laid an egg, they stop showing off.
Flamingos lose color immediately after the chick hatch.
He says a few other species of animals have been observed to use cosmetics, such as some vultures, which tint their feathers with mud.
Thanks, Suzanne. Scientists once thought that only humans use tools, but tool use has now been documented in a number of species, from elephants to octopi. New Caledonian crows use sticks to remove beetle larvae from inside the trunks of trees. Now researchers are getting a sense of how the practice benefits the birds from a survival perspective. Oxford zoologist Christian Roots and his colleagues analyzed chemical signatures left in feathers and blood to determine what proportion of the bird's energy intake consists of larvae. They found that the grubs account for over 40% of the fat and about 15% of the protein in their diet.
We found that these grubs are very nutritious, they have very high fat content, and they contribute disproportionately to the diet of these birds and are nutritionally very important. And that just shows that it pays off to be a good tool user. And so we think we have identified a strong selection pressure on these birds. If you are a good tool user, you have access to a nutritionally very rewarding but otherwise hidden food source.
He says successful tool users are more likely to survive and pass on their genes to future generations. Next, Suzanne has some strange news from the reptile world.
Females of some shark and lizard species can reproduce asexually, without fertilization by a male. Now the phenomenon, called parthenogenesis, has been documented in boa constrictors, according to evolutionary geneticist Warren Booth of North Carolina State University. He says he received a call one day from a reptile breeder whose female boa had produced some unexpected offspring.
Well, I was contacted about 2 years ago by a woman called Sharon Moore, who is the breeder of the boa constrictors in question. And she asked if I would be able to carry out paternity analysis on a female boa and her offspring, because the males that she had in the vivarium with her were not believed to carry a genetic trait that all appeared in the offspring. So all of the offspring exhibited a certain recessive genetic color trait, and they were all female, which was very unusual. So she wanted to know if one of the males in the vivarium was actually the father of these offspring.
So Booth did some genetic sleuthing. His analysis revealed that the baby snake's DNA came entirely from their mother.
Basically, what has happened is each egg cell has fused with a portion of the egg cell that would normally degenerate. And therefore, it has tricked that egg into believing that it has been fertilized, and then it goes through cell division and produces an embryo. basically the genetic material that they get from the egg, which is a single set of chromosomes from the mother, that is then doubled. So it's basically creating two copies of the same chromosome.
He says asexual reproduction decreases genetic diversity, so it's not surprising that it's uncommon. Nonetheless, he has evidence that parthenogenesis may be occurring in other snake species as well.
Thanks, Suzanne. The science of genetic engineering has produced some weird but useful results, but perhaps one of the strangest to date is a mouse that can actually smell light. Reporter Justin Warner tells us about it.
To better understand the biology of smell, researchers in the US and India genetically engineered mice to smell light. That might sound like an odd strategy, but according to neuroscientist Florin Albano of Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory, it's a sensible way to study how brain cells react to odors. That's because actual odors are hard to control in the lab, especially when you're working at a very fine level of detail.
Because we don't know exactly what neurons are activated by a given chemical and when. And also smells tend to activate many types of neurons at the same time. If you are to use light, however, you can focus it much better. So you can activate only small subsets of neurons spatially, and also can do that with very good, almost millisecond resolution.
The mice had light-reactive proteins built into their brain's olfactory systems, which made them respond to light as if it were an odor. That was evident even in the mice's behavior.
If you are to present an odor to an animal, a novel odor, it will respond by increasing its sniffing. And this is exactly what they do when you present them with light.
The work has yielded new insights into how the brain's olfactory center processes odors at the cellular level. As for the study design, it may sound far out, but it's actually just a particularly vivid example from the emerging science of optogenetics. Turns out that making all sorts of cells respond to light can help scientists study exactly how they work.
Thanks, Justin. Many human medications are therapeutic at low doses, but become toxic at high doses. The same principle applies to the animal world as well. Suzanne says some butterflies use a plant-based medicine, but only when it's needed most.
Monarch butterflies feed on milkweed plants, and chemicals in the plants make the butterflies toxic to predators such as birds. Milkweed also protects the monarchs from harmful parasites, according to evolutionary biologist Jaap de Rode of Emory University. He says some milkweed species have more parasite-fighting chemicals than others, and he and his colleagues found that this affects where the butterflies lay their eggs.
Monarchs, when they're infected with this parasite, prefer to lay their eggs on plants that will make their offspring less sick.
But uninfected butterflies didn't have a preference.
So this is a really good question. Why don't all monarchs choose these medicinal plants? Well, I think it's the same with humans when we take medication when we're sick. A lot of medication has side effects, and so we don't want to take it when we don't need it. And what we think is happening with some of these toxic milkweeds is that they're in a way also bad for the monarch. So monarchs are very good at using them. They don't get affected by these toxins, and they actually use these toxins to protect themselves. But there is a little bit of a cost there, that they also may grow more slowly on these plants that are medicinal. They may not live as long when they're adults. So there is potential side effects of these medicinal plants, which would explain why not all monarchs choose them.
Thanks for that report, Suzanne. Finally today, the latest installment of our series, Reality Check, where we investigate weird phenomena in science folklore. Lobsters live a long time, and perhaps that's why it's rumored that they mate for life. But nothing could be further from the truth, according to marine ecologist Don Berenger of the University of Florida.
There's a fair amount of evidence of polyandry, which means that the females will actually mate with multiple males. So not only do they not mate for life, sometimes they can be pretty promiscuous.
He says this helps ensure that all of her eggs get fertilized.
The females have lots and lots of eggs. Their reproductive strategy is to put very little investment in the individual eggs and have lots and lots of eggs in the hopes that a couple of them will survive.
So breeding with multiple males may also give a few of her offspring just the right mix of genes to make it in an unpredictable world. And if your favorite science myth needs a reality check, give us a call at 1-800-WHY-IS-IT. If we use your idea, we'll send you a Science Update mug. Well, that's all we have for you this week. Next week, researchers have discovered some genetic explanations for why a few people's immune systems can fight off the HIV virus on their own. And a religious ceremony in Mexico has led to evolutionary changes in a species of fish. Until then, tune into the Science Update Podcast Daily Edition every day, Monday through Friday. You can find it on our website, scienceupdate.com, or at iTunes. You can also check out Science Update's fan page on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. I'm Bob Hirshon for AAAS, the Science Society.